Accession number 24187, reel 6.
Mr. Percy, reel 6. You went to Stiffkey to fire your course, you were saying?
Before that, we went to Buxton and we did basic training on the gun, in and out of action and things like that. And we had dummy shells, like, and load and unload and things like that. And then we went to Stiffkey. And Stiffkey is where you fired the gun, and there was a... we were in with the Air Force, and they pulled a drogue along, and we fired at the drogue. And at the time, there was predictors. The fire were predictors, and but the predictors had to be put on level ground, and you know, everything had to be done perfect. Well, you couldn't do that later on when we were abroad, like, because we didn't have time for predictors. And it was too intricate. And we fired, it was winter 1941, we'd done, I think it was a fortnight's training, firing at drogues, and that was it. And then after that we were fully qualified, both for gunners, and that was it.
And Stiffkey itself, was it a big camp that you were on?
It was on the Norfolk Broads, and it fired out at sea. It was, there was drill instructors, you know, the... all the big noises in the gunneries, and they're always worried about accidents and things like that. And if the gun stopped and there was like a stoppage, you had to wait so many seconds, or a minute, I think, and then unload the gun, the bloke catch the shell, and then you took it to a safe place, you know, and this is it. Just general gun drill, in and out of action, and that was what we got all day. And then we fired the gun properly, you know. And it was a marvellous gun. I reckon it was a good gun anyway.
And when you had a stoppage and you were in action, your gun would in effect be out of action, although the Germans were overhead all the time.
Stop. The gun would stop, and then they elevate the gun, and then the sergeant would tell you to unload, and then the shell kit, what was on the tray, on the shell, it used to drop out the back. And a lad used to catch it, and then he would tuck it away and put it behind the gun pit wall, out the road. And then the sergeant would say, fire again.
So and if that happened when you were in action, did you have to wait that period of time?
No, just unload and threw it over the wall. But it was very rare you got a stoppage like that. It was once or twice it happened, and they just said, unload. A lad caught it, one of the ammunition numbers, and he just tossed it through over the gun pit wall away from us. That was it. We were more firing at jury than anything else.
Did you have to alter the fuse for...
There was no fuse.
No fuse on that shell?
No. It was just like a bullet. And it had its own casing, just like a bullet. And it had a fuse at the back, which, as it burnt, when it got to the end of the fuse, it used to set the TNT off. But if it hit the target, there was a hammer on the front of the shell, and there was two, with a spinning of the shell, the centrifugal force used to push these ball bearings away so that the hammer was free, and as soon as it hits the target, it exploded. So if it hit the plane, and sometimes they said if it hit a raindrop, it might get off, but it never happened with us, because there was no rain in the desert.
Yeah. What about the noise of the gun firing? Did you have any protection for your ears?
No, we didn't have no protection at all. When we first went abroad, and even when we were at Stiffkey, we never had any protection for our ears.
Was it a very loud gun?
Oh, it was a crack more than a bang. It was a crack, crack, crack. We call it tibum, 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 you know, and it was a crack really. And you were right next to it, because you were sitting in the seat and the gun was next to you, and it was but when you were in action, when you were firing a gun, you didn't seem to notice that, you know. It's one of them things, you were frightened before, but once the gun fired, you lost that, and you were more concentrating on what you're doing. But I think after the action, we were laughing and joking and things, but some of them were like that,
shaking. What about clothing? Was that just your clothing you wore in action? Was just your normal khaki? You didn't have any kind of special clothing?
Well, it depends where you were. Like, if when I were on Norfolk Broads on at Stiffkey, it was freezing cold, but we just had our only, you know, our greatcoats and things like that. But other places, we had a special coat, a thick coat, because it was freezing up in the mountains, and even in Italy, and we had a thick coat, and you didn't pull it on, you got in it. It was stood up on its own, and you were like air sentry. It was mostly air sentries you used it for. But once the action started, you tossed that away because you were running about, you kept yourself warm. And we used to get in Italy, we used to get room ration. And that was later on, like in our service. But it's Stiffkey, it was cold, but even when we were done PT in the morning, it was winter time, we were only in vests and shorts. But you run about and you were warm. I mean, you didn't stop still. Everything was done at the double. And when you're done PT, you run about and it kept you warm. You didn't, I think when you're younger, you didn't feel the cold.
What about accidents? Were there any accidents?
One or two lads. One lad, he was using one of them, the knife, you know, like a curry.
Like a machete.
Machete. Yeah. He was using this machete and he was cutting a tree so to get some camouflage. And it slipped and it cut him there. Cut him in the arm. And, of course, we got clean. It was a clean towel. We put the clean towel on and tried to staunch the blood, and then we got him away. And then the MO at the time, he played war with us for putting a towel on, because there wasn't. But we had these field dressings, but they were only small, you know, pocket ones, and it wouldn't have covered the wound because it was a slash across there. And we just put the towel on and used compressed to stop the blood. Of course, if we put a tonic on, you know, it might have done, but you've got to keep loosening it off. So we will put the towel on, but then they went, we got on them in the ambulance, and they'd done that. They had put a tonic on. But we want to show her about the tonic, because you had to keep losing it, loose it off, and then let it go. And things like that. Another lad, it was a sergeant. We got a stoppage, like I said, and he was having a look at the gun. And he says, well, I can't see out, Ryan. He shouted, fire. And, of course, the lad, the number four, fired the gun, and a recoil hit this sergeant on the jaw, broke his jaw. You know, he was looking up the gun, like, and the gun come back, and he broke his jaw. And I don't know what happened to him after that. I don't know, he went somewhere. But he wasn't all that badly. It was like a bang on the jaw, that's all, and broke his jaw. That was about the little things like that, you know.
Were there aspects of using the gun that you had to be careful of in case you got an accident?
Oh, I also used to get stupid people, but they used to leave the rifles unloaded, and somebody else would go and pick the rifle up and fight. Might hit anybody, but little accidents like that. We're mostly with small arms and Sten guns, because we had Sten guns, Bren guns, and rifles, but we hardly ever used them. They were lying in the gun pit.
So what happened to you after Stiffkey?
Well, after Stiffkey, we went to Hereford, a place called Hereford, and it was a munitions factory or something, but it was all camouflaged. And we had these guns, they were on a tower. They were took up there and assembled up there on the tower, but it was all camouflaged, and we weren't allowed to fire unless we were attacked. Of course, we never fired at all. And then we decided they sent us to Gloucester, which was a tested aircraft. It was like a big airfield and that, but it was well camouflaged. And Germans used to come over, but they were either too high for us to fire, but we weren't allowed to fire unless we were attacked. That was it. We never fired a shot.
And that was in case of giving away the location?
Yeah, we used to get different locations. We went to Hereford, Gloucester, Pembroke, Docks, and after that, I went back to Gloucester, and that's when I was sent abroad. But in England, I never fired a shot. It was all bullshit. It was, that's where we're on it. We had to be in by the hours of darkness, like, but why, I don't know. Of course, we didn't fire at night time. In fact, we never fired at all. And it was just plain soldiers. And that was it. I never liked them. My two brothers, one was fighting in Eritrea. He was a warrant officer. And my other brother had been took prisoner at Dunkirk. And to me, we were just plain soldiers.
Were you still with 112 Light Attack at this time?
Yeah, aye. But I never seen any action with them really at all. There was I forget what it was. I was on a charge for some little thing. I was late back from. I was supposed to be on the camp during the hours of darkness. I was about 10 minutes late and I got put on a charge. And there was another lad who was on the same. We were both together, like. And there was a draft come up for overseas. And the phone rang and it says, go to Ireland, get yourself ready, you're posted overseas on a draft. So he goes packing his kit again, like, and then the phone rang again and it says, Gunnar Percy will accompany Gunnar O'Halloran. And that was it, and we were both. Anyway, we went to the main camp, I think it was at Gloucester, and they tell us that there was more than us, like, there was about, I think there was about 12 of us. We had been posted over, say, on a draft. I can remember the draft number, RFGOA. That was a draft number. And anyway, one of their lads was a Barrack Room lawyer, and he said, you can't send us abroad till we get our embarkation leave, which was 14 days. So they were going to send us straight away there. So anyway, they had a bit of a conference about us, and anyway, they said, right, you are, go on leave tomorrow, but before you go, you get your inoculations. Well, I got two inoculations, one in TAB and something else. There was TT and TAB in one arm. And I was full marching order, like, you know. You had to take all your kit. And I got on the train and my arm was up like a pudding. And the trains in them days were packed. And I was getting pushed and shoved. I was as sick as a parrot. And anyway, when I got home there, my sister was calling. And she couldn't be bothered with her. She never even had us a cup of tea. I was sick as a parrot. Anyway, I think we've done our 14 days embarkation leave.
And then what time was this? What date?
No, it would be end of 1941, beginning of 42. And then we went down to Woolwich, and we went to a place called Shrapnel Barracks, and at Woolwich, and we got kitted. Oh, we got another medical. And it was funny, it was a woman medical. And anyway, we got our medical, the usual, free from infection and all that. And we were at Woolwich for about a fortnight. We thought we were gone straight away, like, but we were there for a fortnight or something like.
What did they do with you in that fortnight?
Well, the kit that was out were, you know, were torpies in them, dear. And got us ready for to go overseas.
And was this your KD kit, your shorts and so on?
No, well, we got that, all that gear. And no, we didn't get any shorts or no. We were just torpy. We got torpy. I can remember that. I didn't think we got any shorts. Not sure about that. But we're still in the uniform, now the usual uniform. And we were there for, it was more like, when Woolwich, it was artillery place. It was a massive place, and to us, like, because there was about 8 gun parks, you know. Well, the infantry would say they would, you know, they're not gun parks, they call them something else, like we call them gun parks. And everything, if you crossed them, you had to double, I was telling you. And there was a lot of bull there, and you did a lot of jankers. Well, you wanted on a charge or anything, but they picked on you, and of course there was a lot of people peeling spuds and things like that in between your day and your drill. And in fact, they stopped us saluting officers because there was that many officers knocking about, and they were sick of saluting, so we. So they just said, if officer passed, you just looked at them, and, you know, and you didn't salute anything. But we'll down London, I think, to stop them, because there were that many officers down there. And, of course, there was a few air raids and that, but we didn't take much notice of them, like it. Can't remember much about them, but finally they said, right, you are, we're going to embark.
How did you feel about going abroad? What was your feelings at that time?
Well, I wasn't really worried about that. I was glad, really. Like, I was pleased to go abroad, because I'd volunteered for everything, and I always got turned down. And in fact, I volunteered for the Air Force, but they said you had to have a secondary education, like gone to the beat or something. Yeah. So I wasn't much good at that. So that was turned down for that. And for the Dems, well, it was gunners aboard ship in them days. There wasn't any proper name for it. And they picked about six or seven blokes, and that was the thing. They only wanted six or seven. And I got turned down for that. Of course, there was a lot of blokes volunteered besides me, because they were sick of the phony war, as they call it. And I was glad to go abroad, and it was an adventure to a young lad. I think I was only 17, 18 years old, and I enjoyed it, really. And what was funny, there was a careless talk called cost lives. Well, this is funny to me. We had topies on old packs, and they marched us through the town, and they put us on the train, and they had to draw the shades down. We couldn't look out the window. And I mean, they were advertising we were going somewhere. But the lads were saying, I said, we've got topies, and we've got, they've kitted it out for a Mediterranean or some place like that. He says, but we've probably gone to Iceland. This is what the rumour was. Anyway, we went to a place called Greenock. And we went on a lighter, a small boat. And I asked the sailor, I says, what ship are we going on? He says, the Queen Mary. I thought he was pulling my leg, but he wasn't. It was the Queen Mary. And we went on the Queen Mary. And I was on B deck, I believe. And it was hush-hush then, at Willie, you know. Even this bloke shouldn't have told us on it was the Queen Mary. But we knew it was a Queen. When you got up to it, you knew then it was the Queen Mary.
It must have been very exciting.
Oh, it was.
For you.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it. And of course, the Queen Mary had been where there was a room for a couple. There was bunks in, so that was like six of us in one cabin. And that's what it was like. And the trouble was, it wasn't built for the Mediterranean. It was built for the Atlantic run, so it was red hot. The water was hot. Everything. And if you went for a shower, it was seawater, and you got sea soap, and that was soap, but it give you a bit of lather or something. I think it just scrape your leg. And it was a lot of lads were. I think there was a few deaths on the ship. And
what was that due to? The heat.
The heat killed some of the people off. They said, oh, there's a few. Of course, they played the last portion all at the end.
Can we have a look at the journey? You went to Greenock and got on board. Were you part of a convoy, or was it straight through?
No, it was on its own.
Was it quite a fast ship, wasn't
it? Fast, I forget how many knots.
What was life like on the ship itself? You've mentioned the fact you were in bunks.
Both were gunners, and they put us on as a submarine watch, or air sentries. They used us for air sentries and submarine watch. And sorry about that. Of course, we only done so much of it, and then, of course, there was quite a few of them. And I think I'd done about two air sentries, and that was it. And we went.
What was the route you followed? Can you remember?
No, we were only gunners, and they didn't tell us. And but the rumours was, we went from Greenock, we went real practically to America. The ship was zigzagging, you know, to avoid. And they said we went as far as America, and then we come back and we went round the Cape. I went round the Cape and up the east coast of Africa, and then we landed at a place called Port Tufik.
But what was the food like on the ship?
Very good, but when we first kicked off, there was that many seasick, even on the Queen Mary, it was rough, you know. I don't know, we must have been up Iceland somewhere, but it was rough. The seas were like mountains. Most of them, well, there was only about five of us on a table what held about 30. And there was only about five of us, and those are all seasick. And as a touch wood, I've never been seasick. I've never been airsick.
And other than the duties that you did, how did you fill your time in?
Oh, that's when I got caught playing cards, gambling. We were allowed to play bingo. You're allowed to play bingo on the deck. Well, the sailors used to run that, because there were sailors, Air Force, and Army on board. And the sailors were, forgetting they had another game, name for it, but it was bingo, you know. And you weren't allowed to play find a lady, like things like that. You weren't allowed to gamble. Only, I saw you, bingo. But we used to play cards for money. And the Red Cap, there was Red Cap support as well. They collared us, took all the money, and we were on a charge, even on the ship. And but they couldn't, you know. They just it went on your records or something. But they couldn't give you any punishment, really. And
was there a canteen on board?
You could get beer, cigarettes. Well, in England at the time it was hard to get cigarettes, you know. But then on the ship, you could get. But there was a lot of American cigarettes, Camels and Morris. And there was American cigarettes, and you couldn't buy them in. You had to buy them in a pack. There's about 10 in a pack, 10 packets in a pack. And but it used to be cheaper than what we get them in England. And we were okay. Like, we didn't want for anything. We were well fed. And
what about inspections? Did you have inspections?
No, there was very little bull on the ship. Only if you played cards or if you gambled. Of course, you had to keep lights out. Like, you know, if you caught showing a light, anything would be yellow. That was.
It wasn't very regimental then. No.
In fact, they used to come around and say, "Who are you?" Of course, we used to say our draft number. We say we're RFGOA. That's our draft number. Where you going? We didn't know. Anyway, but there was an officer, what was supposed to be, we never seen him. And anyway, when we got to a place called Port Tufik, I think it's called Port Said now, it was Port Tufik. And
Before we come to that, well, you were obviously moving from a cold climate down the coast of Africa, getting warmer all the time. You said it got very hot indeed. Were you allowed on deck to sleep?
No. You weren't allowed. You're allowed again down the ship. When it was there was one time we went down, and the alarm went off. Of course, all these doors shut. We couldn't get up. We were down below, and you couldn't get up because these watertight doors were shut. While this raid was on, well, it wasn't a raid. It was just a false alarm. And of course, I says, "I'm stuck down here. You know, if anything happens, I wouldn't have been able to get out because the doors shut and you couldn't open them." But I think the Navy lads here were out to open them, but we didn't. And we just sat for about 10 minutes or quarter of an hour. We were down there, and then I said it was all clear, I got a bit of a fright then, because I was a good swimmer.
Did they tell you how far they'd gone each day and the speed of the ship? Did they give you that information?
I think it was about 30 knots. I think they said it was 30 knots. In the where the dining hall was, there was a map. On a big map, you know, it's covered the wall, and it was a map of the world, and there was a light showed you where the ship was, but it wasn't working when we were on, you know. But they tell us that when the passengers were on, they could tell by this light where they were in the world. It used to move as the ship moved. It was marvellous. The ship itself was a beautiful ship, like, you know, even though it had been done up for the carry troops. And I enjoyed that. We stopped at South Africa.
Yeah, I was going to ask you where you stopped on the journey.
Well, we stopped at South Africa, but we weren't allowed off the ship.
Where was this? Do you remember the port that you pulled into?
We stopped at Cape Town.
And then they've allowed you off?
They weren't allowed us off the ship. And, of course, I think there was a bit of a flap in North Africa, like, and they wanted us there quick, you know. Anyway, I think we stopped 2 days in Cape Town.
Was it a boring journey for you?
Well, you played cards and things like that, and there was, you couldn't do any swimming or anything like that. All you could do was go and have a shower, because it was red hot, and it was uncomfortable heat, and you used to go in for a shower, but it was seawater. It was seawater all the time, and I think the water was for taste, and you know, it wasn't very nice. It was like warm, you know. The ship wasn't very comfortable as regards that, but I've been on better ships, like, you know. It was a lovely ship, I admit it, but it wasn't built for the Mediterranean. It wasn't fit for hot climates.
And you said a number of people died.
Yes, but I didn't know either word.
No.
They just said somebody had died, like, because it was a hospital.
Did you have a service and bury them at sea?
No, we didn't. No, it was just, I think they just tossed them overboard and paid the last post. But we did know, they did say somebody had died. And I think there was about 3 on the journey where we were. But it was mostly heat killed them off.
Did you have to call in at any other ports for refueling the ship at all?
Just Cape Town.
You had no more stops at all?
No more stops.
The Red Sea would be particularly hot.
Wait a minute, I'm forgetting. There's one place, Freetown. And they stopped the ship. We didn't want it there very long, but there was these coloured people, these Arabs and that. They were diving in for coins. We were tossing coins in the water for them. And they used to dive in to catch the coins. That was at Freetown. We didn't get off the ship at all. We just stopped, and I think they will refuel or something like that.
Did the natives, were they trying to sell you stuff from the boat?
No, they were just diving for coins, that's all. They couldn't come on the boat. So they just dived for the coins and that.
That must have been entertaining.
It was for us, like that.